Thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you today. What I'm going to be talking to you about is our vision of the future of global health. And during the course of the talk, I'm going to be hopefully getting you upset a little bit, and I'm going to be asking you to ask you a few questions. Now, how many of you have heard about the supercourse? Raise your hand. Okay, that's very good. I mean, it's not bad. When I first started out a few years ago, it was like 5 or 10% of the people, but now we're getting more like 50% of the people. Okay, now, what I'm going to be doing today is to give you the Ron Laporte overview of the future of epidemiology. And the reason I love to do this is because even if I'm wrong, in 10 years I'm going to be dead, and you can never test whether I'm right or wrong. So I'm going to give you a bunch of series of things that I think is going to happen in the area of epidemiology. And this comes from our WHO Collaborating Center here in Pittsburgh. And Jan Dorman is the co-director of the WHO Collaborating Center. She's an associate professor. She's a professor in the School of Nursing. And also, she's an associate dean in the nursing school. And also, she's my wife. I always have to go in that order. Okay, now, I got involved with this because I'm not a techie. I'm an epidemiologist. I love cardiovascular. I love diabetes epidemiology. A few years ago, we set up a WHO multinational project, and I really got into it. It was great fun. We're going around the world setting up registries for type 1 diabetes, and I think I visited like 50 countries in doing this. It was really, really a lot of fun. But one of the things I found in doing an international study, is that, and this was in the early 80s when we began, one of the biggest problems that one runs into in an international study is the problem of communication. And we knew this in the early 80s. It was very difficult to communicate between centers. This was a time that you had to send 5 letters to Mexico City with the hope that one would get there in 3 weeks. I mean, an incredible problem of communication. Well, I went over to the computer center at Pitt and said, well, geez, is there anything you could do to help me out? I mean, this is costing me a fortune, $60 to send an express mail package to Helsinki. I mean, it was like totally crazy. And he looked at me and goes, well, you know, there's something that they're doing over in the computer center and also in physics, but they're not doing it in the area of health. And I go, well, what is it? And he goes, it's the internet. You know, it's 1982. I go, what the heck is this internet? What is this internet thing? And I asked him 2 questions, and all of a sudden I stopped being a diabetes epidemiologist. The first question was, how quickly can I get a manuscript to Helsinki, Finland? He goes, about a minute. I go, oh my God, a minute. And the second question for we in public health that I know you have central to everything was, how much did it cost? And he goes, nothing. Oh my God, this is my whole future. This is the whole future, bringing prevention onto the internet and putting these two together. Okay, AIDS, global warming, diabetes, TB, cancer, H1N1. How many of you think that the world is getting healthier? Raise your hand. Okay, 3, 4, 5 of you. Amazing. Well, geez, this is terrible. Look at these kids. Basically going to McDonald's, and this was the first McDonald's in Pennsylvania. Oh my God, this is really horrible. But the reality is, I hate to say it, it isn't that horrible. Look at these kids. They are really fit, really thin, and they die by age 40. So hey, yeah, we got this obesity thing, but man, if you look at the kids from 100 years ago, the life expectancy was so low, it was terrible. So I actually believe that we're doing better. And I'd like to present this. This is Ardu, the first human being. This is Truman, the president, and that is Obama, of course. Yes, very good. Obama. From 4 million BC to 1949, life expectancy increased about 20 years. So for every 1 year gain in life expectancy, it took 200,000 years. From 1949 to Obama, it's only 60 years, but we've seen about a 25-year increase in life expectancy. And so every year in life expectancy took only 2.4 years. So the speed of increase in health, in life expectancy after World War II is about 80,000 times greater than that prior to World War II. One of my students framed this very nicely. She said, well, for every week since World War II, life expectancy has increased 2 days. I mean, isn't that fantastic? There's never been a year since World War II that life expectancy has not increased. So for this reason, I think the future of epidemiology is epidemiology of optimism. We're doing a good job. Hey, come on, let's not face it. You hear, oh, there could be an epidemic here, there could be an epidemic here. Well, yeah, but geez, come on. Life expectancy is still increasing. I'm very happy about that because we played a major role in it too. But a lot of us are going, oh, think about this epidemic, think about this epidemic. I'm just looking at life expectancies. Okay, our supercoast model is a very simple model. We developed a large multidisciplinary network of about 50,000 people worldwide. From this network, we have an open source PowerPoint lecture library where we're collecting the best lectures in the world, and we have about 5,000 lectures that we make available on the internet for free from 20 Nobel Prize winners, from the head of the NIH, from the head of the CDC. And the reason we use PowerPoint is a very simple concept. For many of you how many of you have ever taught? How many of you ever used a chalkboard? Oh, geez, most of you use chalkboard. Think about when you're using a chalkboard. You go into the class, I'm teaching Epidemiology 101, I'm writing John Snow, blah, 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 and come down to the end. What do you do at the end of the class? You erase it. You just killed a lecture. It's gone forever. It's gone. With PowerPoint, I don't get any money from Microsoft, although I wish I did. With Microsoft, basically with PowerPoint, what happens at the end of class? Your lecture's not gone. I can share my lecture with anybody in this room at the end of the class, and you can use it in your teaching. So we're involving recycling of lectures. Okay, and distribution system to educators and with quality control. So we basically distribute this worldwide. We have about 4,600 lectures. And last year, we taught about 6 million students learned from our lectures. So we had a major effect in terms of bringing epidemiology and public health and epidemiology to the world. And a lot of our lectures, we have our lectures in 31 different languages, and you can use these for free in your teaching too. Well, who will these template lectures help? First of all, they help old coots like me. Because if I want to present on cardiovascular epidemiology, I'm not a cardiovascular epidemiologist, but I can go use Henry Blackburn's lecture and use that for my teaching. It helps new educators. Now, it's very interesting how many of you taught. And I want you to think back in your teaching. Think back of the first class you ever taught. For me, it was horrible. I walked into the class, I was 22 years old, and the class was 50 that I was supposed to teach. Oh my God, sweat. I mean, I was sweating like mad. And then basically I had 93 pages of notes prepared, and I went through those notes in 17 seconds. So, I mean, why do we have new teachers have to develop the lectures by themselves? Why can't they use Stan's lectures? I mean, why can't they use other people's lectures? But what I developed this for was primarily in developing countries, because if you're in developing countries, what you see is the teachers are very good, but the lectures are not up to date. We can give up to date lectures, so instead of 10 years behind the times, they can use Stan's lecture, which she just prepared 2 weeks ago. So it's very, very powerful. Okay, now, basically, all we're doing is basically standing on the shoulders of giants in terms of sharing our lectures among these people. And so that basically I can use a Luke Culler lecture, a Henry Blackburn lecture in my teaching. And the idea is this is our job. We as faculty members share our knowledge. Why can't we just share it with everybody else? And now now that we can do it, we also have, we've also distributed DVDs through WHO. And if anybody wants one, I'll give it to you. But there's 3,600 lectures on this DVD, but you can't, this isn't a gift, it's a gift that's meant to be given. So if I give it to you, I want you to make at least 50 copies for other people. Okay, the third trend is local. We have to think, well, we do global work, while you do local work. Well, we got to pull these things together and think about the impact locally and globally for the world and for at the local level, because each impacts upon each other. Okay, the epidemiology of fear. We've been spending a lot of time on this, and very few people talk about the epidemiology of fear. So what killed 100,000 pelicans? What produced the oil on the Gulf? What produced gas for $4 a gallon? Well, I'm going to show you, and don't say anything out loud, but I want to see how many of you know. What is this? How many people know this? Okay, very good. See, none of the young people know. All the people over age 30 know. What this is 3 Mile Island. 3 Mile Island's impact was incredible. Because at 3 Mile Island, nobody died, nobody was injured from radiation, and no radiation escaped. But our whole energy policy changed because people were afraid. And that's the nature of some of these disasters, this fear, this epidemiology of fear, and we as epidemiologists can attack this epidemiology of fear. So this is in terms of fear. So basically, ours is to fight for freedom from fear, and the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Fears are educated into us, and if we wish, they can be educated out to us. Our information and data can trump fear. And we had this problem, I was in Pakistan at the time, is that the kids were scared to death in Pakistan at the earthquake because the schools pancaked down on top of the kids, so the kids wouldn't go to school in the rest of Pakistan. We can attack that with our information saying, well, and that's what we try to do, this epidemiology of fear. And that's something that we as epidemiologists can do. And so what we've been developing are disaster super courses where within minutes after the disaster occurs, we get a lecture out to people as rapidly as possible and have this information to people to learn from and teach to people to basically try to quell this. And basically, we did this for Hurricane Rita, where basically we had a lecture prepared, and it was distributed to every school in Texas and 42 of the states before Rita hit land. And so people knew about this. And this is, with the H1N1 lecture, it's got really huge. We discovered the first case of H1N1 in Mexico City by a friend of mine, a pediatrician in Mexico, saying, hey, we got to do something about this. Here comes an epidemic. And so we created a lecture within 24 hours. And CDC didn't know at the time. WHO didn't know at the time. We translated it into 3 days into 11 different languages. And I think the coolest thing is Arabic, Farsi, and Hebrew. Isn't that cool? And then basically we reached about 50 million people, and this became a trusted source, and we as epidemiologists are trusted sources, because people, like in China, don't want to listen to the government, they don't want to listen to the media. Here's a bunch of scientists saying, well, this is what we find, and people believe it. Okay, another thing that we're focusing on now, this only happened in the past 2 weeks, is the concept of a mobile global health supercourse, cheaply reaching billions of people worldwide to improve global health and prevention using mobile technology. Isn't it incredible that I can call from here a billion people? What does this mean for epidemiology? I don't know, but what a powerful tool this is. No, I can reach, there's 4.2 billion people who have cell phones out of 6.2 billion people in the world. This is one of the most incredible tool for cell phone epidemiology, and how do we manage it? I don't know, but this is the future. Okay, what do we do to improve global health? It's got to be effective, cheap, ubiquitous, acceptable, and sustainable. We would argue that mobile global health fulfills all those criteria, and this is part of the future for how we're going to improve health. And basically, this is our first supercourse app, that's out there now. And there's various things that you can use this for. I'm not going to go through each one of these, but I'm going to be meeting with somebody tomorrow in the area of global telehouse inspection. Now that sounds really crazy, but if you think of your house and you get a crack in your house, you get scared to death. oh my God, there's a crack in my house. Oh, geez, what am I gonna do? Then you have to get a contractor to say it's okay. But think if you're in a disaster and your house is partially destroyed, it's even worse. So what you really need is something like telemedicine, but in the area for houses. And we're gonna be working tomorrow with in terms of developing it. Okay, global awareness. Most medical, public health, and nursing students are interested in global health. However, there's very little training in global health and prevention. How many of you have had two courses in global health? Oh, four. Wow, that's most than most places. Well, in general, how many of you are interested in global health? Okay, 70 interested in global health, but two only have training. So we've got to improve the training worldwide in global health. But this is the problem right here. This is the problem. Here is an epidemiologist. The problem is, for every epidemiologist, there are 240 clinicians. So we just don't have enough epidemiologists around. And the reality is that we're never going to be able to train enough epidemiologists. And this one is actually more interesting. In here, basically, this epidemiologist, for every epidemiologist, there are 24 morticians. So we can bury them, we can't keep them alive. But it's amazing how few epidemiologists there actually are as you look into it. So basically what we did is we wanted to double the, I always like to have holidays targeting. We want to double the world's knowledge of global health by Groundhog Day, February 2nd. That's the big day when we have twice as much global health around the world. And the approach that we took is a kind of a strange approach, but very effective. First of all, we went fishing for deans. I had 25 students working with me around the world, and what we did is we fished for deans. There's no listing of all the deans of medical schools or schools of public health or schools of nursing in the world. Well, there is now. We don't let it out, but there is now. And so I had 25 students. And so what we did is basically, what the students did is basically, they went to Tehran University, the webpage, they went to Cambridge, they went to University of South Carolina, and we were looking for the dean, and we were looking for the dean's email address. And we got them. We got about 2,000 deans from all across the world. And our distribution scheme is the recognition that we're never going to have enough epidemiologists. So why don't we spread our knowledge to as many people as possible? Basically, these people are not going to be the epidemiologists, but why can't we get that information out to people and share this information worldwide? So we developed, we have 50,000 people in our Supercourse network. We have 2,000 deans in medical schools and public health. We have the heads of all national and medical and public health societies. And we have all ministers of health. And we're collaborating with WHO and the Library of Alexandria to basically, what we're doing is sending to all the deans and all of our network is a URL for a lecture on global health. And that lecture is now translated into 11 different languages. We also then have been sending out, I think many of you may have gotten this, five slides. This is five slides of global health. Please use one of those slides during the next year. In this way, we can double people learning about global health. Okay, well, we've got a lot of awards, basically. Lancet likes us. We publish in Science and Nature, I mean, BMJ, I mean, who really cares about that? We were the best of the web for Science Magazine, very, very impressive. But for me, as an epidemiologist, this is the most important. Nobody in epidemiology has ever gotten this award. We're in the top 100 of PC Magazine. Are you impressed? I mean, forget about all this other stuff. This is what is going on my tombstone. It's very PC Magazine. Wow, something to strive for. Okay, well, if you deal with Nelson Mandela, I love his quotes because he really hits things and hammers well. What he said is education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world. And I agree 100% with that. I'm trained, I'm a cognitive psychologist, I'm trained in epidemiology, and basically it's education that is really driving and improving much of the health of the world. So if we frame it differently, global health education and prevention is the most important weapon you can change the health of the world. So if we change education, we improve and make global health and prevention to the rest of the world, we can have a profound effect on improving health. Okay, now, there are two people here. And the problem is, I can't get the sound on it, so I'll sing. Talking about my generation from The Who. So our generation of older people, well, at least I'm an older person, our generation of older people, we were brought up with television. I mean, I was 40 years old before I knew the internet. I mean, this is really incredible. But the power of this information technology to change our field in public health is not going to be by us. Well, anyways, I don't know why that's not coming in. But anyways, it's not going to be by us. It's really going to be by the younger generation who have the cell phones, who have Twitter, who have Facebook. These are the things where the changes are going to be made. And what we have to do is we as the older people, older mentors, allow it to flow and basically give some of this responsibility to our younger people because they know a heck of a lot more about this area than we do. And to me, the whole future of epidemiology and public health is going to be through this information technology. Okay, thank you very much.